You can be in the most beautiful room in the world, but if it doesn't function well, if there isn't a place to set your drink, if the upholstery is uncomfortable, if the scale is off, you're not going to feel at ease. Especially in one's personal home, being able to walk in and just let your guard down and feel at ease and feel comfortable is the most important thing.
Welcome to Talk Shop. I'm Ariel Oaken, a New York-based interior designer, writer, and editor looking to bring a little bit of magic into our homes every day. After years as a writer and editor in the interiors world, I founded my own editorial site, Fenimore Lane, in 2020, and the Talk Shop interview series was born. Each week, I delve into the personal experiences of the top interior designers and tastemakers around the globe. To kick off today's episode, I am so excited to welcome my friend, the talented Elle Decor A-list designer, Paloma Contreras. Based in Houston, Texas, Paloma's design sensibility is a modern take on traditional style, gravitating toward classic silhouettes and timeless pieces, paired with a touch of glamour and an infusion of color. Paloma is known for designing beautiful interiors in her signature modern meets traditional aesthetic, resulting in spaces that feel polished, refined, and effortless. Paloma has repeatedly been named to the prestigious Elle Decor A-list of the top interior designers in the world, and Paloma and her work have been featured in numerous publications, including Elle Decor, Architectural Digest, House Beautiful, Vogue, The New York Times, Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal. In addition to her timeless designs, Paloma is a sought-after speaker, author, product designer, and shopkeeper, but her most important title is mother to her beautiful daughter, Margot. You can find her lighting collection at Visual Comfort and her curated retail shop, Paloma & Co. in Houston. Paloma's newest book, The New Classic Home, is now available. Please join me as I welcome Paloma to the podcast. Hi, Paloma.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You are amazing. I love reading your bio because I'm just always astounded by how much you do and how much you have cooking in the kitchen. You're just superwoman.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. It's been a long and winding road. So I've had some time, I guess, to do some things.
Well, let's talk about that. So first, to kick off the conversation, we've been asking everybody on the podcast, can you describe your style in three words or less?
I would say classic, feminine, and let's say glamorous. I feel like there's a little touch of glamour.
So walk me through, and for everybody listening, a little bit about your career, because you have such an amazing story to tell. You started out in education, which is similar to me, and you launched La Dolce Vita blog, which I was the biggest fan of, and I read even when I was in college, and my first big feature was La Dolce Vita. And then tell us how you ended up where you are today. It's just so inspiring, and I think so many people often have questions about career pivots, and yours is just the best story.
Thank you. There are lots of pivots along the way. I'll try to give you the abbreviated Cliff's Notes version because it is kind of a long story. But I did, you're right, I started out as a high school Spanish teacher. So I majored in Spanish and Italian studies. Languages were my first love, and then kind of fell into teaching in a way because I still wasn't sure what I wanted to do towards the end of college, and teaching felt familiar and safe. So I did that for a few years. But, you know, in those teaching years, I felt very, very creatively stifled. While I enjoyed the subject matter and working with the students, I longed for a creative outlet. And so the summer of 2007, I decided to start a blog. I had read a few blogs here and there. They were just, you know, sort of series of personal essays about what was going on in their lives. And that's kind of how my mind started out as well. It wasn't design focused at all. And then around that time, we bought our first house. And so I was online looking for design inspiration and resources. And there were a handful of blogs at that time. While they were cool, they didn't really speak to my aesthetic. And so I just very organically started posting about things that I enjoyed and was drawn to. And Better Homes and Gardens magazine used to run like a blogger of the month column in their print edition. They had somehow come across my blog and they featured me 1 month, and then I saw my readership spike. So at that point, you know, wow. I felt like, okay, well, I should maybe spend more time on this. And I still, you know, blogging back then really wasn't what it was more recently or what, you know, being an influencer is today.
No, you were like, it was like the beginning frontier. Yeah.
Yes. OG pioneer days for sure. And so nobody like set out to create a brand or, you know, like make money off of doing this. You kind of just did it out of passion. And then the opportunities came over the years as brands and other people in the industry started to take note. So eventually I would do these like brand sponsorships, which we now are so accustomed to, and started to make a little bit of money off of the blog. So I left my teaching job and sort of pursued this kind of full time, and then also tutored some kids on the side. And so that was like how I was making some money at the time. And then eventually I would land at Visual Comfort, the lighting manufacturer, which is actually based in Houston. I tutored the owner's son.
And that's where you met your husband, right?
Yeah. So my husband works there. He's been there for, gosh, almost 17 years, I think. And so I knew the owner, and that was how I ended up tutoring his son. But he called me one day and said, I'm looking for a director of marketing and I can't find anyone. Would you come in and meet with me? And so basically he saw value in the fact that I was in the design blogging world in this like online realm of the design industry. And he saw that as kind of where the future was headed and saw value in that. And so I did take the job. It was a very, very enriching position in the sense that I was granted access into the manufacturing and product side of the industry. And I was able to see, mm-hmm. you know, how something goes from an idea or a sketch to the marketplace and everything that then goes into supporting and leveraging that design or that idea in the marketplace, you know, all mm-hmm. of the marketing that surrounds it, press, meeting all of the editors, being around all of these amazing designers who were, you know, licensors designing collections for them at that time, people that I greatly admired. So it was an amazing experience. And then I started to get the itch to go back out on my own because I'd been freelancing for a long time when I took this job. Eventually in 2013, I decided to start my design firm. And for a long, long time, I had sworn that that sounded terrible and I would never want to be a designer because I had a lot of friends who were designers. And I just thought, you know, that sounds like a lot to manage, a lot of headaches. It sounds like it can be kind of a thankless job. And, you know, some of those things can be true.
Well, you also saw from the licensors too, like you saw the back end.
Yeah, I mean, you see the back end. I think people have a perception that our industry is so glamorous and fun and it's like this lighthearted thing. And it certainly can be glamorous and it can be fun. But the truth of the matter is there's so much grunt work. There's so much managing of a million different things. So many balls are in the air at one point.
It's all logistics.
It's all logistics. You're fixing other people's problems all the time because at the end of the day, you know, it may not be your fault, but it's your issue if it comes down to taking care of the client. So there's all of that. But I love design. I love design more than any other thing other than my family, obviously, but adore it. I feel so fortunate to get to do this as a career. So I guess something changed in my mind and I felt ready to do it. And that was 10 years ago. So in those 10 years, we've been designing and growing and exploring some other facets of the business.
I mean, that is amazing. In 10 years, you have two books. You have an incredible collection, lighting collection with Visual Comfort. You've done countless homes. You've been Elle Decor A-list many years in a row. I mean, you should be so proud of yourself. It's incredible what you've built in a decade. And how you got to there is just so incredibly inspiring. And I think so many career pivot stories kind of have this through line of you were at a job that you didn't find passion in, and you kind of listened to your intuition and did something on the side, nurtured this feeling that you were interested in creativity and interiors, and you built on it. And look at where it took you. I mean, it's amazing.
Thank you. That's so kind.
It's true.
Well, I agree with you in the sense that I do believe in the the power of positive thinking and manifesting the things that you want. And
I do too.
I've been in a job that I was miserable in, and life is just too short. So for better or for worse, I believe that if you want something badly enough and you work hard enough at it and you have talent and you learn everything that you can, that it's worth trying. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but at least you've tried. And you're not in a situation where you're terribly unhappy and you're just going through the drudgery of every day. So, you know, I think the lesson to be learned there is that you really should chase your passions and be, you know, realistic and do what you can to like set yourself up for success, whether that means finding mentors, having some kind of platform that's going to help you get a start in a very saturated marketplace, because there are a lot of us out there.
Yeah.
You know, like anything that can help set you apart, learn everything that you can, but it's definitely worth pursuing. If you love something enough and you want it desperately enough and are willing to put in the work, I think that's the key factor is people can idealize something that isn't their current reality. You know, the grass is always greener, but if you're willing to put in the work, then the universe will conspire to help you.
I 100% have the same mentality. I really believe that when you put out that energy, it comes back to you, and not necessarily overnight, of course, and not, you know, in a day, but that hard work and doing it day after day. And maybe it's not your day job for a couple years and maybe you do it on the side, but I do think that it eventually clicks, and you are the ultimate example of it clicking. You do have an incredible eye, and part of that eye is collecting all these amazing things that you sell in your shop, Paloma & Co. I have a gorgeous chest of drawers that I bought from you. It was the first antique piece that I ever bought for myself, and it's in my dining room. What drew you to want to open your retail shop? I mean, retail is definitely like its own microcosm. And what have you learned from retail, and how did that sort of come about?
Okay. Well, I'll start by saying I love that you have your very first antique piece that you bought for yourself from us. That's amazing.
Yes.
And I remember the beautiful piece. It's so pretty and beautiful. And I know it's in your dining room.
Yes.
So that's so fun to hear. But I started Paloma & Co. in 2019. I really started to get serious about the idea in 2018. And it was kind of born out of the travel that I was doing. I was traveling all the time, and I was coming across artists and artisans that were doing incredible things. I was, you know, shopping for clients and then finding things that I loved but weren't quite right for that particular client or that particular project. And so I'd end up buying these things and filling a storage unit. And so eventually I was like, okay, the danger in being a designer and having a storage unit full of things is you forget about them, because of sight, out of mind. And so then they tend to sit there forever, and you just shop other sources. So for whatever reason, the idea like just sort of came to fruition. I also at this point, you know, had been writing my blog for 12 years in 2019. So I started in 2007. And part of, you know, blogging and monetizing that is using affiliate marketing and selling things through your posts, through affiliate links. And so I was seeing the revenue that I was making off of sharing other people's products and getting a very small percentage of that. Yep. And I felt like, okay, there's a really viable audience to tap into here where, you know, we could be making all of that profit instead of a percentage of it if we were sourcing from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of, you know, an amalgam of different reasons and motivators for starting it. But we opened in 2019. Thankfully, we had started working on an e-commerce website pretty much right away, and that launched that summer, because then, of course, the following year we had COVID. And had we not had e-commerce, I feel like things could have gone very differently for us. But
yeah,
the last few years have been incredible years of growth because people, you know, were so focused on home. So that has been fun. But our focus has really remained the same since the beginning. It was all about finding things that were unique and beautiful, that had a timeless aesthetic. We have a mix of antiques and found objects from all around the world, primarily France, since that's just what I love the most. And we also represent, I think now, upwards of 35 emerging American artists. And when we first began, it was maybe 5 Southern artists, but that yeah. category has always been so big for us that we're constantly adding new talented artists to the mix. And our customers just can't get enough of that. So
let's talk a little bit about the books. I mean, you've got 2 books now. The new one will be out by the time this airs, which it's called The New Classic Home. What drew you to write your first book? Your first book was called Dream Design Live. And I remember when it came out because you sent it to me. I was still living in the city. Ben and I had just moved in together, I think. What drew you to write that first book? And then what is that process like?
It felt like a very natural extension and next step from writing a blog for 10 years.
Yeah.
I, at that point, was well into my design career, but still not at a point where I felt like I was ready to put out a monograph. You know, you think about the beautiful design books that people you admire are writing. And I, at that point, I was like, I have some nice projects, but, you know, I'm still blogging and I just feel like this needs to be something different. And so I worked with my literary agent, who's so wonderful, Berta, and we decided, you know, this book needed to be somewhat didactic. It needed to be a tool and a resource for designers, but also primarily for design enthusiasts, because that was who was reading my blog. That was my audience. And so I wrote it from the perspective of basically giving a lot of valuable takeaways for anyone who was working on their own home and who might need advice on drapery treatments or how to style their bookshelves or, you know, scale and proportion and all kinds of things. And it featured about a dozen projects of mine, and it was really well received, and people still tell me they love it and that they have gone through and dog-eared so many pages and that they go back to it all the time.
I think sometimes design language can be scary for people. And they don't understand, you know, what a designer is trying to convey, or they don't understand uh-huh. the terminology. And I think the book does such a great job of explaining without using, you know, any terminology that someone doesn't understand or something like that. I think it's a great way for somebody to kind of learn about interiors in a way that feels really approachable and effortless.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the key word, is making it feel approachable. You want things that feel aspirational to a degree, but still approachable. And, you know, I wanted it to be like a really great resource for people to come back to again and again. And then the second book, The New Classic Home, which just came out, is a little bit more representative, I think, of where I am in my career now. So there are still a lot of takeaways in the book, but it is more of a monograph. And there are some really beautiful projects in it that I'm very, very proud of. And the central idea of the book is very much in alignment with my signature style. And it's all about that intersection of modern meets traditional and how the reader can take seemingly disparate things and put them together in a way that feels timeless and beautiful and effortless and can tell their story regardless of their locale or the architecture of their home. And it's illustrated through a variety of different types of architecture. So, you know, we have a beautiful home, a beach home on the Jersey Shore. We have a house on Palm Beach Island. We have a house in the mountains in Cashers, North Carolina, several houses in Houston, which I guess would be in the city. So just, you know, illustrating how you can take this idea of bridging the gap between classic elements and more contemporary elements in any setting. There's some primary, I guess, pillars of that idea. So we talk about color and scale, pattern, tension, which I think is so key to a successful interior. Mm-hmm. But I hope that people like it. I hope they love it as much as the first one.
Is there anything that you think when you're designing that you hold to be, you know, kind of like your crucial, most important thing that you hold on to?
I think a sense of comfort, because you can be in the most beautiful room in the world, but mm-hmm. if it doesn't function well, if there isn't a place to set your drink, if the upholstery is uncomfortable, if the scale is off, you're not going to feel at ease. And yeah. I think, especially in one's personal home, being able to walk in and just let your guard down and feel at ease and feel comfortable is the most important thing. So finding that intersection between form and function for our clients, I think, is the most important thing that we do.
Totally. I mean, I think it's the ultimate form of hospitality, even though it's your own home. I think when it's a space that feels really inviting and warm and everything is kind of has a place, it's like going to the best hotel, but you're living there.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there, I don't really follow design rules so much, but is there anything that you kind of think is an important one, or is there one that you think, oh, that's absolutely made to be broken?
I don't know that there are like certain rules of thumb that I follow all the time. I do think scale is incredibly important, and yeah, it's something that people get wrong a lot. Or, you know, one thing that drives me nuts is like if an area rug is too small for a space.
I was just going to say an underscaled carpet, there's nothing worse.
It's like a little postage stamp in the room. So, you know, when in doubt, always go bigger with scale. You never want things to like feel wimpy and too small.
Yeah.
So I would say that. And I do think all rules, if in the right hands, you know, with the right degree of skill and confidence, any rule can be broken successfully.
I agree. I think that's where the most interesting interiors come from sometimes. Is there any best advice for designing interiors that you've ever received? And if so, from who?
I don't know that there's like a specific nugget of advice in terms of like design itself, but more so on the back end of running a business. And yeah, I think that like really boils down to charging what you're worth, believing in the value that you bring to the table, and sticking to your guns, because sometimes, you know, people will really try to push and have you change your contract or change mm-hmm. your processes, which, you know, at this point, we've designed hundreds of homes over 10 years. So we've figured out what works and what doesn't. And we've figured out what's yep. going to get everybody to the finish line as smoothly as possible with the fewest bumps in the road. So if somebody comes along and they're wanting us to do things completely differently because that suits them better for whatever reason, then that's a big red flag for me.
It's a red flag, 100%. You took the words out of my mouth.
It's mostly that. You know, obviously, there are elements of design or styles and things that I love that I've seen, you know, designers do years and years ago that are influential and inspiring to me. But I think the best advice I've gotten has pertained to the business end of things.
Yeah. I think also for any designers who are just starting out or listening right now, that is excellent, excellent advice. In that if you feel red flags from the beginning, it usually never works out well. And I think trusting your gut and trusting that you've established this process in a way that works for your firm is really important, because people will try to kind of get you to bend and twist a little bit. And I think holding firm to that kind of keeps the wheels running smoothly, for sure.
Totally. And, you know, that's harder in the beginning because you just want the work.
Oh, yeah.
And you're hungry for the work and you need a portfolio. Yep. But over time, you sort of learn to listen to that inner voice a little bit better and identify those red flags more. And ultimately, the goal is for everybody to get to a place where their clients are coming to you because they really want to work with you. They want you. Yeah. It's not about finding the person with the cheapest hourly rate or the fastest turnaround time or whatever. It's because they love what you do and they're excited about going through this experience with you, because it is a very intimate relationship. And in most cases, you're with your clients for a couple of years. So it has to be a great fit on both ends. Because at the end of the day, we're also lucky to be able to design people's homes or to be able to hire an interior designer. So it should be a fun process. And it is when you're in the right hands.
Well, let's dive into a little bit about you. What do you think your home says about you?
I think it says a lot about my point of view and my aesthetic and the things that I love. So we just moved into a new house earlier this year and just finished it. So
beautiful.
I have, of course, that mix of modern and traditional. I have lots of contemporary abstract art, which I've collected over my travels. I have Chinoiserie de Gournay wallpaper in my dining room. And so, you know, it's like all of those elements of design that I love. But at the core, I think it just tells you a little bit about our story and how we like to enjoy our time together. At the end of the day, I'm really a homebody. I don't go out much. I like to be at home with my family. So we're very, like, we like to live comfortably, and we have some more formal rooms in our house, but we mostly spend time, you know, in the family room, in the kitchen, and just hang out together or in the backyard. So I think it would show you sort of the dichotomy of my life too. The side yeah. that loves glamour and beauty and all of these things, but then the practical side too, that's like all about comfort and has everything fiber sealed. People, now, when they've seen my home, my new house, they're like, are you well? Because you have white rugs, white carpet, white upholstery, chinoiserie paper. And I'm teaching my daughter from a young age that there are rooms we play in and other rooms that we don't play in. And she's welcome yeah. to go in those rooms. We were sitting in the formal living room just this morning. So yeah, she has, you know, she's learned. She's learning to live with nice things.
Do you have any favorite places to shop for home?
Yes, I love to go to Paris. I love to go to France and shop the markets and the fairs and the flea market. That is my happy place. And like that's what I enjoy most. The thrill that I get doing that is amazing and really a huge part of why I started the store. And then I also love going to New York. I think New York has some beautiful showrooms and some really great curated shops. So that's always fun for me to get out of like my own realm and go shop in other places in the country.
Where do you find, I mean, I think travel is where you find a lot of inspiration, but is there anywhere else that you sort of find yourself gravitating toward when you're feeling like a little stuck?
I love to go back to some of my favorite books, my design books. And, you know, I find those to be sort of transportive, and it's a way to just like see things differently. I love Instagram. I mean, for better or worse, I do scroll Instagram like first thing in the morning, and then, you know, like at lunch and again before bed. And there are so many things. I feel like my feed feels different now because there's like so much, there's so many like suggested accounts to follow and ads and whatnot that I don't see like my people all that much anymore. But I love Instagram. I feel like it's fun to see what friends and other designers are doing and their travels. There's a DLN trip happening right now in Mexico City. So I've been watching everybody's stories and just getting inspired by the beautiful architecture. Yeah, I mean, inspiration is anywhere you look for it. I mean, it can be found regardless.
I love that. It's so true. Well, we're going to go into, we have the take 10 questions, which are just sort of a little bit of rapid fire, but I think they always give you a little bit of insight into people outside of design. So what is your favorite food?
I would say seafood of any kind.
Interesting. Love that. Favorite drink?
A spicy Casamigos margarita.
I'm with you on that for sure. Favorite film?
And I guess like pertaining to design, Auntie Mame.
Oh, I love Auntie Mame.
It's so good. I mean, so I watch good. It at least once a year at the holidays typically, but the set design is so incredible. And she's so fun.
Yeah. Favorite hotel, which I'm so curious because I feel like you have been everywhere.
Recently, the JK Place in Paris. It's super chic, designed by an Italian designer named Michele Bonan. And it feels, it's intimate, but it feels like you are staying in the most stylish friend's townhouse in the best location in Paris. And the interiors are to die.
It's amazing. My friend actually was just there last week and she said it was incredible. And I have all of Michele's books. They're just epitome of elegance, I think.
Yeah, he's so talented.
Favorite city, I think I can answer for you. It has to be Paris, right?
It's Paris. Good guess. Yes, Paris.
Favorite bedding. People, I feel like in our industry, are so particular about bedding. I always love to ask.
I use a lot of Matuk for clients because it's really great quality and it's beautiful. And I mean, it's not an inexpensive price point, but it's not as prohibitive as some of the others. So people, yeah. I feel like it just like ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, we do too. I love Matuk and it's very soft.
Yes, it feels great.
Tea or coffee, and how do you take it?
Coffee. Like in the morning, I drink an iced coffee with a splash of milk, very small splash of milk. And then at lunch, I do like an unsweetened iced tea. So both.
I love it. I'm like an iced tea fiend. I like drink it all day. It's so bad. Favorite playlist?
Oh, probably one of the Nancy Myers playlists on Spotify. I just feel like it's like roast chicken and mashed potatoes. It just makes you feel good and comforts you.
We play Nancy Myers Kitchen all day in the office all the time.
I have that one too. Yeah. It's a good one.
It's so good. favorite weekend activity?
I love going for long walks on the weekend mornings with Margot and Fabian, my husband, and just spending time together when the weather cooperates in Houston and it isn't terribly hot. It's so nice to just be outdoors. Yeah.
I know. We do that too. I feel like I like to really unplug on the weekends, and it took me like until I had kids to really be firm about like, I'm not responding to any clients on weekend. Like I'm kind of drawing that boundary line around having some sacred time on the weekends.
Yeah, that's important.
Favorite design book? I know that's really hard.
Well, there are so many. Parrish Hadley's Tree of Life that Brian McCarthy and Bunny Williams worked on, I don't know, probably close to 10 years ago now, is a great one because it really goes through the history of, you know, so many amazing designers that came from that organization through the years. That's a fascinating one. A more recent one that I love and go back to a lot is Ashley Whitaker's book, The Well-Loved House.
So good. I keep that on my desk all the time.
There are so many good ones, but I think those two really stand out.
A final few words. So I know you're working on your book, which is out now. What else are you working on? Are there any new projects you can talk about?
Yes. Well, I'm working on a few new projects that we're excited about. We're working on a beautiful 1921 Neil Reed house in the Buckhead neighborhood of Atlanta for a client that we've worked with for several years now. This is actually our third project that we'll be doing together. So that's super exciting. And then we're working on this really cool new build with a talented architect out of Alabama named David Baker here in the Houston area. Also very excited about. And that house actually skews a little bit more English because of the architecture. So that's been a fun challenge for me since I, when it comes to antiques, need more French. So creatively, that's been really fun. And then on the product side, always working on new lighting designs. We just had a couple of new things come out at High Point, and I'm working on a really exciting collaboration with one of my favorite fabric houses that will be out next year.
Lighting?
Yeah. So lots to look forward to.
Do you have advice for someone looking to define their own interior style?
I do. I would say put your phone down and open up some magazines, some books, like flag things that you're drawn to. Mm-hmm. You can print them off your phone if you want to, and then put the phone down and just sort of go over everything that you've pulled and try to figure out what the through line is, because there's always going to be a common thread. So if you're struggling, and I hear this from clients all the time when we first start working together, a lot of times people are like, I know what I like, but I don't know how to put it together. Or I like so many different things and I don't know how to put it together. And so I think people get overwhelmed. And I certainly feel overwhelmed sometimes because you're seeing all kinds of things. We have this constant stream of imagery coming at us through social media. And it's very easy to be like, well, I like that and I like that. Or, you know, I appreciate them for different reasons, but to really be able to get to the core of your style, you have to learn how to tune that noise out. And I do think that's a really valuable exercise, is like going through various images that you've collected and that you love and trying to analyze what that through line is, and then editing from there until you end up with, let's say, 5 images that are representative of what you love most. And that's actually an exercise that I wrote about in my first book, Dream Design Live. So a lot of the first part of that book is all about identifying and refining your own style.
I feel like there was so many great takeaways. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I am so happy to have you on. You've got so much going on. Where can listeners find more about you and your brand if they aren't already following you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun, and I'm just thrilled to be part of your fabulous new podcast. I'm so excited to listen to all the episodes. People can find me on Instagram at Paloma Contreras Design, and the store is Shop Paloma and Co., and that's A-N-D. And then you can find us online at palomacontreras.com.
Yeah, and your new book, The New Classic Home, is out now. Be sure to pick it up, everyone. Paloma, thank you so much. You are amazing. I'm so happy we got to connect.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of Talk Shop. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more thoughtful discussions and amazing guests. Make sure you follow on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so you never miss an episode. And of course, follow me at Ariel Oaken. See you next week.